Welcome back to the restart of the Common Criteria track today. Up first is Diane Hale from NIAP.
I'm not clapping. How do I get this to work, Brian? It's not. Sorry. They want to see the slides, I think. Is that so? I do that? Oh, there we go. I figured that out. Hello, I'm Diane Hale. As Brian said, I work in NIAP. I'm going to walk through our policy as it pertains to our requirements for algorithm certificates in place of some of our assurance activities and what we look at and what we require and so forth. So first we'll start with policy 5, which, as it says, we require all the cryptography to go through NIST testing. At a minimum, we require CVP. We would like to see CMVP. That's more complicated right now, and some vendors do the CMVP. It just isn't as fast as CVP. So we require the CVP right now. Our end goal in the future will be CMVP, as it is actually mandated by DoD for the most part. But for our NSS customers, the minimum is a CVP certificate. The relationship between NIAP and NIST, as you know, almost all COTS products contain cryptographic functionality. For NIAP, that's all IA-enabled products, which is our mission. The NIST crypto standards are used by both private and public sectors. We ensure that our NIST algorithm testing activities are incorporated in our PPs. We don't just say in the PP, get a NIST certificate. We actually spell out the test activities which are performed as part of a NIST evaluation. NIAP requires the CVP to get on our PCL. Other nations may evaluate against a PP and do their own certificate or algorithm testing, and they can still get on our PCL, but evaluations conducted in the U.S. are required to use NIST. The goal, obviously, is to streamline the evaluation process and reduce cost. Again, most of the federal government requires FIPS or CVP certificates, and so you already have to do it anyway. So we kind of take the results of that and incorporate it into our assurance activities, again, so you don't have to do duplicate testing. How do we verify that a FIPS or CAVP certificate is valid? Basically, the product name should be the same, must be the same. The operational environment is the same. It's the hardware and the software as defined in the security policy. Again, it's not always simple because you get to choose what's listed on your certificate, which sometimes differs slightly from what your product name is. We work through that, and we have a policy 5 fact that talks about what we consider acceptable and some examples in there of operational environments and what we accept in that term. We require the certificate number listed in the security target as part of evaluation. That way customers can see, they know exactly which certificate meets that requirement. Of course, the SFRs are mapped through the certificates, so when in NIAP, the security target will say for this requirement, key establishment, encryption, decryption, whatever, it'll say that certificate meets that specific requirement. And all public-facing documentation must be consistent. So if you have this particular example, is if your ST says you only have algorithm certificates to meet the requirements, you can't put in the other public-facing documents that you have FIPS 140-2 because that hasn't been verified. It has to be clear that exactly what's been tested. A lot of people make the mistake and just put FIPS validated, FIPS whatever, and that's not necessarily equal to FIPS 140-2. So you have to be clear there. Again, what we do is we review all the documentation, as I said, to make sure that certificates that you claim are not historical certificates. They're not considered valid. So while you did get an evaluation 5 years ago for an older product that doesn't exactly match what's in your ST, then that will not be acceptable. NIST has also transitioned away, and the example is RNG, so we no longer have those requirements in our PPs. The tow summary specification, again, if it's described in the TSS, it can't conflict with what's in the SFR. The DRBG claimed in the ST must also be the DRBG that you described in your entropy analysis report. Sometimes that may be a mistake. One document might not be updated. So we do verify that just for completeness, because the products do change sometimes from the original ST. Again, no misleading terms. If you didn't get the full module validation, we don't expect to see a claim for FIPS 140-2 in the security target. Again, a lot of customers, they get confused between FIPS 140-2, which is the module, versus just algorithm certificates, so we just want to be clear. And then if you're claiming a module, for instance, as many people do, the algorithms are prerequisites to that. So you can't have a bunch of algorithms listed that aren't actually included in the module validation, because that's a prerequisite for FIPS. So if you do claim a module, all of your algorithms, certificates, and those that were tested have to be listed in that module. How do you know what to look for? Again, you have to go back to the SFR. Some PPs may require just RSA signature generation, and some may require both generation and verification. We have the mapping document, which pretty much maps to our SFRs. It says, okay, and I have an example coming up, but if you say you do RSA signature, if it's required to do generation and verification, when we look at the NIST certificate, if we just see generation, then that's not applicable, and you'll have to go back and get the extra testing or verify witness that it wasn't just a documentation error. Again, older certificates might be for older standards, so we do 186-4 now, so if you put a certificate in that was done back against 186-2, we will not accept that. For some of our SFRs, multiple listings apply. This comes into the case for key establishment, where you may not be using an 856A KDF, so we will take the CVL for that, which is all of 856A except KDF, but that's all spelled out in our mapping document. And then some requirements in our PPs aren't necessarily obvious. They're for the protocols, and they point back to the primitive SFRs for AES as an example, right? If you're using SSH and it requires some AES, then your FCS COP would also have to claim that AES mode or key size. Here's an example of the mapping document version 1, which we do have published. I just put one example in here, but it's pretty simple. If you claim ECC with the NIST curves, right, then your certificate must list, again, the requirement is 86-4, so you'd have to see 186-4 there, and whatever curves you've claimed in your SFR would have to be listed there for both generation and verification for this requirement. Any requirements that aren't addressed would also have to be performed by the CCTL, and that's spelled out in the mapping document, those requirements where there's additional testing involved. Our current efforts, again, we support the charter of the CNBP working group, and they're working, they're actually doing their big session right now in the main room where Janine just briefed. They're automating the algorithm testing. That'll be a big help in this area. It'll be pretty simple to get the algorithm. It's supposed to be a quick turnaround and things match up. And right now I'm updating the CAVP mapping document, which was like the example there. We didn't address the protocols the first time. We're doing that now, pretty much TLS, SSH, and IPsec. So it'll be the same exact mapping document. It'll just say, okay, if you claim this here, then this other requirement must include that. And then in addition, we're going to be requiring the a lot of vendors, they have the 800-135 KDFs, which isn't required as of right now to have a certificate for those, but we will be requiring them. That document's in a draft right now, and I expect to send it out to the labs for, and our validators for review in the next month, so it'll be coming soon. And we're also adding new FIPS approved in this algorithms or components, which I'll talk about in a minute. And as far as crypto goes, we are also continuing to support the International Crypto Working Group as they develop the requirements and assurance activities. It'll be standard across all of our, the goal is all of our CCRA members and our CPPs. So here's some of the things that are going to be coming out in the updated mapping document. The first one is 8956A, and if anybody's looked at the new NDCC, NDCPP 2.0, it's been corrected there, and it'll be updating our mapping document. But basically, we found out through just, you know, usage of the mapping document and evaluations, Diffie-Hellman Group 14, I think it was mandatory, but now it's a selection, but it's really not compatible with 856A as it is now written. NIST is updating that 56A, and revision 3 is expected to be published by the end of the year. In the interim, NIAP and NIST worked with the network ITC to rewrite the key establishment requirements in NDCPP version 2, and we developed an assurance activity that's an interim solution until NIST comes out with testing. But once Rev 3 is published and NIST puts testing together, we will mandate that. I think, I don't know if anybody's here, the other, I think I told somebody, but we're looking at like a 3-month requirement timeline. So once NIST has the testing, we'll update our document, and we know things are in progress, so you can't just stop at the last minute and add something. So we're looking at a 3-month requirement time frame from when we publish our updated document for that after NIST develops the testing. 56B, we're looking into that, the assurance activities in terms of what we have. All of our PPs right now have assurance activities for 56B, and there's some prerequisites. NIST doesn't have a 56B test, so they don't plan to work on it until 856A Rev 3 is complete, which is pushing out, so we're probably looking at probably a year away from that. But in the interim, we are going to relook at that assurance activity and see if we can utilize any of the existing NIST certificates to meet that or rewrite the activity. Once we do that, it'll be a 3-month time period for everybody to get up to speed on that. As I mentioned, the protocols, and we're going to map to the primitives and to the KDFs, there'll be a new requirement. And then we're going to add some new things. So the new things are 856C. Right now we've got a almost final draft version. We're going to add the 56C as an optional KDF. It's a new, it uses expansion and extraction method. It's related to an RFC, I forget the number, but 5369 maybe or 5869. But we will be adding that as an option to our mobile device fundamental PPs and possibly others if that's required, but we haven't gone that far. But for mobile, it'll be in the review phase. I don't know when it'll be published. We have to have NIST final review since we wrote the activity. But again, once that comes out, it will be required in 3 months. And again, NIST is working on 800-132 PBKDF for storage applications, and once they publish that and develop the tests, we will require that in our PPs if it's one of the options. SHA-1, as you know, 800-131A transitions, they don't allow for SHA-1 anymore only for non-digital signature applications. We are going to go through all of our PPs right now and work towards removing the SHA-1 altogether. There's NIST did a briefing and found some inconsistencies and some, I guess, vulnerabilities in SHA-1, so they're kind of moving away from that. So we'll be removing SHA-1 from our protection profiles in the near future as we go through them. NIST transitions beginning 2018, key agreement and key transport are now required to be 856A or B compliant. This doesn't affect NIAP. because our PPs already require 56A or 56B compliance, but for those getting modules, they used to allow you to use non-approved or non-allowed versions of these two things, and we wouldn't accept that as part of a module. If you claim a module or an algorithm, you have to be 56A or B compliant to meet our protection profiles. And I don't know, I didn't go to the NIST briefings this during the conference, but if everybody isn't aware, they're moving towards the new automated algorithm testing, and they have no plans to add any new tests to CAVs. So all new algorithms and tests developed by NIST will go right into the ACVP test tool that they have in development, and it's mostly partially done, most halfway done, I think. But they're not even going to add new until they finish getting all of the old tests into there. So I don't know their exact timeline, but I know it's probably a year out before any new tests would be added. Again, in the interim, where we require specific tests that NIST doesn't offer, we will develop assurance activities with our IASMEs to cover that in the interim, and that'll be added to the PPs, and again, mandatory at that time. And so that's all I have in terms of where we are with how NIAP uses NIST for certificates and algorithms or modules. Does anybody have any questions? Yes?
For a transition period until NIST actually develops.
Oh, sorry, you have to use the microphone.
For until NIST develops the actually finalized versions of the testing, is it possible for NIAP to issue a policy clarifying what is expected to do while the transition period, for example, stating that we expect you to carry out assurance activities, or stating that like this, you allow vendor information?
So when we add things, it's added to the protection profile, and I mean, we can add a policy of when we'll accept it, but if there's no test, we're going to write a assurance activity for it, so we're not planning to do any vendor affirmation in the future.
The hard copy protection profile from NIAP allows 186-3, but the NIAP documents only provide 186-4. This came as a kind of a rude surprise to several vendors. Does that take precedence over the profile?
So I would have to look at that protection profile. It depends on what the requirement is. To be honest, it depends what the requirement is. I mean, we should update it to 186-4, but some of the changes between 186-3 and 4 might not apply to that requirement, so it might not matter, but I will have to take that back and look at it.
Can
so.
Follow up?
Yeah, we can follow up, yep. So.
Can you check to see
that mic's on?
Is it on? So my question is really related to any updates on the AAL2 bus being allowed. I think it was like a migration unit that had a check profile, or there was a product that had a protection profile.
So as part of the recognition arrangement as of September, everything EL or CPP compliant, EL1, EL2 plus flaw remediation only is accepted across all the nations. NIAP, we will only evaluate against protection profiles.
Okay, so basically the threat filing is until September, and that's it.
Yes, so in up through now through September, up to EL4 is mutually recognized. No, that's a hard date. So September 2017, that's a hard date. So, thank you. So, right, 2017 is when the new, it's when the CCRA recognition arrangement update goes into effect, where all the nations will only mutually recognize CPPs, EL1 or EL2 plus flaw remediation. Right now, the nations recognize up to EL4 only.
Okay,
more questions? Okay, oh wait, got one.
How long the old PPs are valid? Because the new CPPs are coming out. Any of the old, NDPPP with the NDCPP V2 is out. How long the NDPP certifications valid? Are they going to be phasing out?
So the products that are evaluated against the PPs that are sunset, the ones that, is that
yeah,
the question? So they're still valid until their assurance maintenance date, which is posted on our site. And if they want to remain on our site, they will have to come in against a new PP as they're developed.
Okay. So if once we do the AM activity on that, it's going to be extended, even though it was valid with the old PP?
No. The dates won't be extended.
So for an NDCPP evaluation, which is a sunset in NIAP approved protection profile, if the maintenance date comes up and the PP against which that product was originally evaluated mm-hmm. has been sunset, then that necessitates a new evaluation, just because we have developed a new protection profile which has current requirements set mm-hmm. and so therefore we say the PP is sunset for a reason, you need to reevaluate it.
Yeah, for further information on that, we have publication 6, which is our assurance maintenance policy, which is how we enforce the CCRA's assurance continuity policy, and that outlines when you can come in for maintenance in NIAP and how long you're there.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Thank you.